Continuing with Mathewson on 28 August 76. And anyway, on this questionnaire, I think I'll ask a question like that. Do you think that this situation has changed at all over the years that you've been in radio astronomy?
No, I don't believe so. I've worked in different radio, you know, it's not just from Australian experience,
mm-hmm.
From Dutch. And I worked in 1970 at Vestapool, and basically I could see there that radio astronomy has drawn attention to some terribly, of course, fascinating things in the universe. And without radio astronomy, these things would never have ever been discovered. But radio astronomy misses out on, I think, on the glamour part of the whole of the thing as a whole. It's always the optical astronomer that's got the glamour out of it and got the big breaks, the big astrophysical breaks. I think this is certainly true in quasars. A radio astronomer is limited, definitely limited in how far he can go.
Only with the radio data.
Yeah, he always comes up against a brick wall. And at that brick wall, he stops. And then he goes back to his techniques. And of course, he's a tremendously clever person. And I'm not just because he doesn't push through into astronomy, because he's a genius. All of them are in electrical engineering and in antenna work and software and the fascinating things they've done. But they definitely, I think, are a breed on their own. And then the astrophysicist is another breed on his own. And, mm-hmm. and that's the way I think the subject has gone.
Well, that's very interesting. I would think it's debatable. And once again, I think I'll ask something like that. I mean, one could argue, for instance, the microwave background is something that can be interpreted pretty much just on its own, and is tremendously important. Mm-hmm. But your viewpoint is some.
Yes, but for instance, you see, it didn't. They knew what they were looking for. I mean, the impetus to actually look for a microwave background had already come from a
cosmology. But that's not how they discovered. They did not know about this at all.
Okay, but
you're saying the subsequent interpretation.
It was around though at that point.
The subsequent interpretation was based on namely.
And so all I'm getting at is that once again the radio astronomers detected it, but they didn't do much with it.
What you're saying is that the radio astronomers can't do much themselves. They're always reliant on the optical data, whereas without radio, optical astronomy could proceed, and you're saying the converse is not.
Optical astronomy would proceed in a very dull fashion without the radio astronomers.
Right. But it could proceed, whereas the radio could never really make it without the optical. Is that the sort of thing you're implying?
I don't know whether I'm implying such drastic things as that. I think radio astronomers would make a good contribution,
mm-hmm.
Observationally and that, but I do believe that the optical astronomer or the astrophysicist is really the chap that takes it to where you want to take it.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
The radio astronomer is an engineer, and he's got this word radio astronomer, and it's almost a misnomer.
But now, what about you were in Holland, and you see that the radio astronomer there often is not an engineer? And in fact, many graduate students today trained in astronomy call themselves radio astronomers. I think I would include myself in that category, and I'm not. I don't know how to build a receiver. That's why I was asking. Do you think the situation is changing? But
yeah, I guess it Holland, of course, you've got optical astronomers mixed up with radio, and it's probably not so severe. But even then, I've noticed that they do tend to concentrate quite a lot on techniques. It forms the major part of the conversation. You know, how will we extend the east-west line of Vestibor, and what redundancies do we have, and what signal-to-noise do we have, and how many channels we'll have,
and that's right.
And it forms, if you listen at lunchtime, which is a very good indication,
yeah.
I bet you that there will be 90% of the talk will be about technical problems, and 10% of the talk will be about astrophysical problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you perhaps okay. want to go on with stuff first?
Okay.
Well, thank you unless you really want well, something else. Well, I I'm quite happy to stay because it you might not get to 14:30.
Okay. Just a couple of things. The relationship between optical and radio astronomy, at least during the time you've been in the field, from 1955, I'm interested if you think it's changed or not.
The relationship between radio and optical.
I mean, the acceptance of the optical community, of the radio community, this sort of thing.
I think the there's no doubt. In the early days, it just is that the optical astronomer didn't quite understand what was happening, and anybody, I think, when met with that sort of situation, strange situation, he sort of tends to shy away from it. Mm-hmm. But now, of course...
So when did you think it changed, this attitude?
It's hard to say. I don't really... I think the biggest thing that ever happened was the quasar, the point of discovery of the quasar.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the time when optical astronomers realized the tremendous impetus that radio astronomers were giving to the field,
mm-hmm.
and how that this was one of the most exciting things in the, that had ever been discovered, and the whole thing was due to the radio astronomer. The initial push was due to radio.
Right.
I think that was the time when things changed quite considerably.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
So that ends the interview with Don Matthewson on 28.